It is 12:10 and we have returned to the meeting. We are, after break, we'll do a quick roll call. Dr. King?
Present.
Dr. Bustillo?
Present.
Dr. Hike?
Here.
Mr. Barton?
Here.
Mr. Greer?
Here.
Ms. Cardoza?
Present.
Ms. Crowley?
Here.
And Ms. Richardson?
Present.
And I'm Judy Chepius. We are all present. Dr. King, meeting is yours.
Thank you. Circling back to Mr. Kempton and Ms. Kent, there were two, I think, things they were looking at for clarification based on some questions. So were you able to find the information?
Dr. King, before he responds, and he's going to respond, but I have a question, and that is I've got Randy Newburn on the call. And she has answers directly responsive, and she thinks they're very relevant to Mr. Barton's questions because she was the PTA that he referenced. And so I would ask that we, and she's got other things that she needs to do this afternoon. So I was wondering if we could take a few moments to just swear her in and just ask her, I mean, you can ask her whatever you want, but at minimum, I would just ask if Mr. Barton could direct those questions directly to her. She feels it's very important that she be allowed to clarify those issues.
Mr. Barton, really quick, before you do this, were you referring to PTA McKenna Brown?
I was referring to PTA McKenna Brown.
Okay, that's what I thought. So I don't think, Ms. Kent, this is the PTA that Mr. Barton was asking about as far as the statements that she made in the investigation.
Randy was working.
Yeah, I think... Because I would say, Ms. Kent, what I was looking at is I saw Ms. Newburn's affidavit that was submitted late this week that, you know, depending on how you look at it, either recants or kind of adjusts what she says. But my concern is more about the testimony from Ms. Brown.
Well, I mean, she's been on the phone. She's been on the call for a couple of hours now. And I think she feels like she has something she wants to clarify. So I think it's important. I don't think it would take very long. She was working at the same time as McKenna Brown was working in the clinic.
I would ask, though, Ms. Kent, if she didn't come forward or was not part of the investigation initially, I mean, I leave it to the board, certainly, if they she'll be added additional value to what we already know. I don't know that we need some more testimony from them.
My thought is, in the interest of just allowing Mr. Kempton to provide a full defense, I don't know that it can hurt. That's kind of my inclination. Is I want to be mindful of Mr. Kempton and especially given the nature of the claims and the seriousness of them, I want him to have every opportunity to provide a defense. And so that would be my inclination. I think we can be very fast about it.
I completely agree. I just want to make sure that as we go through, we don't have more people joining the call that want to make statements.
Right.
And so I want to just be mindful of time and respect for everyone's time, as well as making sure we have all that we need. But I don't want there to be more and more people joining calls and being sworn in and adding more testimony that doesn't necessarily bring something additionally significant to what we already know. Does that make sense?
Yep.
Okay. This is an informal interview as well. You know, if this goes to a formal hearing, you know, the doctor will have a chance to present evidence that.
No, I know, Dr. Greer, but the point of this is, if it's available, is to try and, if possible, adjudicate these matters without a formal hearing. And so, if there's important evidence, we want you to consider it. And I think it won't take long for her to talk, and I won't even ask her any questions. If Mr. Barton just can redirect the similar question to her, I think it would be helpful.
I mean, like I said, I don't know that it will help, but I'm willing to do that if it will make Mr. Kempton and the folks over there feel like they're being given an opportunity. I second what Mr. Greer thinks. You know, if it goes to a formal hearing, there will obviously be more time for that. But if she's here and waiting, I would be willing to do that if Dr. King and the other members of the board are open to it.
And Ms. Kent, I don't speak for the board, but I do speak for myself. I foresee this going forward to a formal hearing, just speaking for myself based on the testimony of what we've heard so far today. In the testimony of the record, I see this going to a formal hearing.
I wouldn't disagree.
I obviously, there's been no vote yet, but that doesn't change the importance of hearing the testimony at an informal hearing. I mean, she's been on the Zoom call for two plus hours now, and she has something to offer. But certainly we can list her as a witness at a formal hearing.
I think it's against the beard.
We can do both.
So, Dr. King, would there be any objection to me asking her a few short questions regarding allegations?
Yeah, just a few short questions, but not a statement. So, Judy, do you mind swearing her in, please? Oh, what? Her name was Randy Newburn, did you say, Ms. Kent?
Yes.
Okay, thanks.
Ms. Newburn, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
You swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
Yes, I do.
Thank you.
Okay. So, Ms. Newburn, we asked a few questions of Mr. Kempton about some patient complaints that my understanding is you may have become aware of. Is that correct?
What I was referring to when I talked to Philip and Kim was more, it might have something to do with what you were saying about other patient complaints, like that were overheard, but it was more in what Mindy said at the very beginning when she said that there was a PT aide that said that there was another patient that complained about uncomfortableness, and it wasn't, I'm getting feedback.
From Judy.
I feel like it was taken in the context of the patient complained about Steven, but it was not a complaint about Steven. It was just that the patient was uncomfortable doing an exercise. And then when she brought it to our attention and I referred that complaint to Steven, he responded well and said, okay, well, we're not going to do that. And that's fine. She wasn't uncomfortable with Steven. She was uncomfortable with laying on her back for an exercise because she was wearing a tank top and had larger breasts, and it wasn't about Steven. It was, I don't know how to clarify it.
Okay, so let me try to step in to kind of short circuit this. So
yeah.
You observed a concern from a patient who, given the clothing you're describing, was neither AP nor BO. Is that correct?
No, it wasn't either of those. It was addressed as another patient had complained and I was like, it wasn't about Steven.
Was that complaint made directly to you or did you overhear it?
It was directly to me.
Okay. And when you received that complaint, was it after treatment from Mr. Kempton?
No, it was before she went in like to do her exercises. When she first walked in the door and I walked her over, she was like, I don't want to lay on the table on my back today because I'm wearing a tank top. And so I would just prefer to avoid those exercises. And so I referred that information to Steven and he was like, okay, we won't do those. Then we'll do something else today.
Okay. And is that the only complaint you became aware of during your time working for Mr. Kempton?
Yes.
Okay. And did you ever do any follow-up other than having Mr. Kempton say, no, we won't do those exercises today?
I don't recall if there was any more follow-up other than that.
Okay. Is there any other experiences that you think might be, and I will tell you, I already have your affidavit and kind of your character reference from Mr. Kempton, which we've taken and considered.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have any other memories or experiences relating to either patient AP or patient BO? All that would be relevant.
I don't remember patient BO. I remember AP pretty well because she was like a long-term patient.
Okay.
But I never observed any like sense of uncomfortableness other than like every day was pretty normal when she would come in. So.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Newbern. I really appreciate that.
Any other questions for Ms. Newbern? Okay. Thanks, Ms. Newbern.
Thank you, Dr. King. I really appreciate it. And Mr. Barton. I really appreciate the opportunity to be able to present whatever we can.
Okay.
Were you able to find the two bits of information before the break?
So I've still been looking. I can't find any an area where she complained about pain down her arm. That might have been a verbal complaint that I forgot to put in, but I still haven't looked all the way through it. But you asked if those two patients were in the office at the same time, and I went back to the schedule, and there was a day or two that they were in the office at the same time. So whether they knew each other, whether they talked with each other, I do not know that. But they were in the office at the same time.
And just to clarify, same day or same time?
Same day, same time. Well, one came in like at 8:45 and the other one came in at 9:15.
Okay. Thank you. Thanks for checking out.
Dr. King, I would like to interrupt at this point just to help clarify the situation. So the complainants are listening to the proceedings, and I received a email from the mother of BO, who can provide an attestation regarding whether or not they know AP, but I know they're not sworn in. So I don't know if I can relay that message or if they have to be sworn in to verify that they didn't know AP. Mr. Harris.
Yeah, you know, Dr. King, members of the board, I think you have the discretion. I think it comes down to, you know, how important is that fact to your deliberations and to the issues that are before you?
Thank you. Okay. Thanks, Mindy. I don't think I need that information.
Thank you.
This is Mr. Barton. So since I kind of opened this can of worms, I will say my concern is more on whether there is some kind of a social interaction that was recognized that may give rise to some kind of theory in this. If what we're talking about is a couple of therapy instances where we can put the patients together, I'm not overly concerned about it. In my mind, it appears that it may be something that if this does go forward to a formal hearing, maybe we flesh out more. But given where we are, I don't think it's worth the time or the cost of the attestation. I think I would assume that we would all be pretty aware of what that anticipated testimony is, and given what we've seen in the records and what Mr. Kempton's saying, I'm not overly concerned about it. So I would be inclined to say it's not necessary at this point.
Thank you. We had talked then about moving into some questions around substandard care as part of the investigative report and a review of patient records. Would anyone like to lead the questions? Does anyone have any questions for Dr. Kempton?
I will lead out regarding some of the substandard care. So Dr. Kempton, one of the questions that I had is, it seems to my review of the records and to our folks' review of the records, that there's a lot of, for lack of a better word, kind of copy and paste throughout the records regarding assessments and problems and goals and treatments. Is there a function in your medical record system that allows you to carry forward these kind of assessments?
No.
Okay. Is there a way that you copy and paste these assessments in? I guess the reason I ask is I see a lot of them that look verbatim the same.
Yeah, they do.
And so, if you could speak to that.
I would agree with you. And that was something that I recognized. I was super busy in the office at the time, and I didn't put as much effort into my documentation as I should have. And so I did do a lot of copying and pasting and just trying to stay on top of and not get too far behind on my notes. And so I would just copy and paste it a lot, which I do not do anymore.
Okay. Along those lines, this is, you know, just from looking at the records, it seems like some of the therapy, numbers, like the billable units are really consistent from over time for these patients. Was there like a target or a goal, for the number of units that would be billed per patient per visit, or how did that work?
Absolutely not. No, there's no target or goal. It's just the time that they were in there, and if they were in there for about the same amount of time, then those units would be allocated as such.
Okay. Would you ever talk to your PTAs about whether or not – sorry, let me rephrase that. Would you ever talk to your PTAs about the amount of time to bill – Or the number of units to bill, I guess the correct phraseology, for specific encounters?
No, I did not.
Okay.
This is John Hike. I'm wondering, Dr. Kenton, about the patient BO in the feeling that she was shocked and that she was burned. Any ideas on how that occurred and what might have happened from your perspective?
I was unaware that she was burned or shocked, and I was unaware of that. Had I been aware of that, we would have taken off the electrical stimulation immediately, changed and not done it again, or checked the leads or done something to make sure that she was safe.
Okay. In terms of the different interventions that you do, do you normally put patients on hot packs and after treatment, or depending like the one individual with or patients in general with fibromyalgia, do you use hot packs and the likes on your patients?
It depends on the case-by-case basis, depending on the patients and where their pain is coming from. If they're having issues with swelling or edema, then I would not put heat packs on it. If they have muscular tissue tension and they have tight muscles, then, and they're big muscles, then we'll put heat packs on it, electrical stimulation to help relax those muscles that are going to be tight.
Also, I think common after dry needling, do you do a similar thing there as well in terms of hot packs and after dry needling?
Typically, no. I don't do hot packs after that.
Okay. All right.
Dr. Kempton, I really want to give you the opportunity to tell us about your practice, because quite frankly, when I'm looking at all the records in front of us and having been a PT for almost 40 years, honestly, it looks very cookbook therapy. I'm just going to say it, that every patient gets Therex, every patient gets soft tissue or neuromuscular ed, every patient gets the same sort of things, just maybe in different orders, regardless of their treating or their referring diagnosis. And the plan of care stays the same pretty much throughout the patient's entire time with you. So just talk me through how you work with it. Like, if I'm going to come into your office and I'm going to cover you for a day, you're on vacation, how will I know what to do with the patients I'm working with that are on your schedule?
Well, you'll definitely know now, because everything's completely changed since this has all come about. And so now I'm very specific on the manual therapy, and I write down very specifically what we do in manual therapy, and if we do make a change, we put it in our plan and we discuss what we want to change and why we want to change it. And so if you come look at the documentation now, it will look very much different, and you'd be able to see. And so as far as the techniques that I use, I use similar techniques, but I do it much differently. First of all, number one is I'm very, very cognitive of making sure the patients know what's going on and where it's going on and why I'm doing what I'm doing so they can feel comfortable, because I definitely do not want any patient to feel uncomfortable. Number two is that my documentation has changed dramatically as far as what I'm doing, why I'm doing it, and we describe what we're doing in the documentation. So if you were to come in and take over my load for the day, you'd be able to go through and look at my past notes and see what I've done for manual therapy and what they're actually done and what changes we've made.
Now with those changes, how many patients would potentially be on my schedule the day I'm covering you then?
It depends. The office is growing right now, and so I am I'm in the interim of this whole process, and so I don't know what the outcome is going to be. But it is growing, and so I am in need of a therapist. But I'm paying for this chaperone. I'm paying for the chaperone, and I don't really have money in the budget to hire someone else right now. But you would see 30 anywhere between mid-20s and low-30s on a long day, on a 7-to-6 day, and then anywhere between 8 and 15 on a half day.
That's generally 4 patients an hour. If I worked 8 hours and I had 30-plus patients, it'd be about 4 patients
an
hour.
10 hours.
Well, I worked 10
hours, 7 a.m. to 6 p.m. with a 1-hour lunch break.
Thank you. Mindy, I think, have you done some of the, other than just getting the records from the chaperone for clients with the ICA, have you had any records come, and do they look different than they did when the initial complaints were made and you initially looked at charts?
To be honest, because the board ordered me to audit based on the amended ICA, I did not look at the quality of the reports. I do have them.
Okay.
And I'm happy if it moves forward and there's an opportunity for me to do that, I can go back and assess that.
Thank you. Okay.
This is Karen Bustillo. I have a couple questions. How long would you usually take for an initial examination?
Depending on the patient, depending on what's going on and the systems involved and the medical history, it's anywhere between 20 minutes and an hour.
Would you know that ahead of time?
No.
Okay. And then has your procedure changed since your records have been looked at by us into the thoroughness of your initial examinations, your assessments, your diagnosis, your prognosis, and treatment plans?
Yes. I took a documentation course to help assist me with that, and yes, it's changed.
In what ways?
All of it. My goals are much more specific. My assessment is much more specific to the patient. My plan has changed. I only put in the plan of the things that I think that we will, all the interventions that I think that we will be doing. And the intake, all the objective information has changed as far as we try to get functional strength measures and stuff like that.
And how about the thoroughness of your examinations?
Yes, that's changed. As far as the time we spend with the patient, the questions we ask.
How long has it been since you've taken an orthopedic examination and treatment class in any body part area?
It's been a few years. I can't recall exactly the last time I did.
All right. So it would be much easier now for me coming into your clinic to know exactly what I would be seeing after reading your notes.
Yes. Yes, ma'am.
Okay, thank you.
In light of one of the questions, I think maybe it was Mr. Barton asked Dr. Kempton about conversations with the PTAs on billing, and considering Ms. Newbern is still online and still sworn in, I'd like to ask a question about that.
Ms. Newbern's not a PTA, she's a tech. She was a tech.
McKenna, so she's not, okay.
McKenna Brown, she was referring to the instance that McKenna Brown, who is a PTA, discussed. Ms. Newbern was a technician.
Okay. Thank you for clarifying that.
You're welcome.
Is she still on? Dr. Kim, do you still want to talk to her?
No, because I'm hoping she wouldn't be dropping any units for the patients she's working with.
No.
Okay. No, thank you. Are there any other questions around this area of substandard care, documentation, maintaining patient records, interventions that are supported by assessments? Okay. Judy, are you wanting to stop recording and start recording again as we move to a different section or area of allegations and concerns?
No, at this time we're fine. I'm trying to keep it about an hour and a half or so duration.
So looking at the allegations and the investigative reports for both complaints, there's another section that has to do with supervising personnel and maintaining ratios and charging unreasonable or potentially fraudulent charges for billing Medicare for services potentially rendered by a tech. Are there any questions for Dr. Kempton regarding billing practices or supervision?
So, yeah, I guess I'll start us off here. So walk me through your staff scheduling. I guess my assumption is that you're aware of the supervision ratios and what would make you choose to exceed them or change them for your practice.
From my understanding, I thought that the massage therapist was a contract massage therapist and he just did his own work on patients, and I did not understand that would be under my supervision.
The massage therapist, or did you bill manual therapy or massage therapy with service provided by that person?
No.
So he billed independently?
I don't think he billed.
So you paid him to provide massage therapy and there was no billing?
No, he would do massage and I would do manual therapy on the patient.
So how did he get paid?
He would get paid through me as an independent contractor.
And you didn't bill for that time?
I didn't bill for that time.
So you said he would do massage and you would do soft tissue. Did you want that?
I would do manual therapy. But
describe to me your manual therapy then, I guess. Is it soft tissue?
Joint mobilizations with movement, joint glides.
Okay, so manual therapy is just joint moves.
No, it can be some soft tissue mobilization as well.
Okay. And so did you just combine the time that he spent with the patient and you spent with the patient and just lumped it all into one?
No, I would use the time that I worked on the patient for manual therapy.
I guess I'm trying to understand this. What you're telling me is that this massage therapist that was working with you was essentially working and providing services to the patients that were not being billed to any insurance or any patient?
The services he provided wouldn't be billed. I wouldn't bill the stuff that he would do on patients.
Okay. So it was essentially just being provided as a free service to your patients.
As a service for the patients, correct, that I thought would be beneficial for them.
And it was free. Is that what you're saying?
For the patients, I guess for the patients, you'd consider that, yes.
I mean, I'm asking you.
It would help me with the patients. The patients would get benefit from him. And so they would get better. He is a neuromuscular specialized massage therapist, and he did really good with patients' soft tissue problems. And so I thought he was beneficial for the patients.
Did he keep records? Did he document the therapeutic work he was doing with the patients?
Yes.
And was that just in a different record, or was that actually in the patient's chart with yours?
Well, they're handwritten. They're handwritten on paper. Hmm. And so, just like the flow chart, those are handwritten on paper. His records are handwritten on paper, too. And so they're considered part of it.
Okay. So you thought there was a therapeutic benefit, but it was not a benefit for which you felt, or whether you felt it or not, it was not a benefit for which you charged.
I did not believe I was able to charge for his services.
Okay.
And just to clarify, I didn't sign his notes or anything.
Did you ask a question?
You didn't co-sign his notes.
No, I did not co-sign his papers that he used to fill out. No, I did not.
Okay. Thank you.
Mindy, in your investigative report, did you find something different than what were your findings of the massage therapist's role in the patient care?
Well, the patients were under an active plan of care. Mr. Kempton delegated the massage therapy to that massage therapist. The massage therapist would have a separate schedule. He would complete a form that, in my first request for the records, was not part of the medical record, and then they sent them subsequently. I'm not sure where they were kept, but I did receive a stack of records for patient treatment. The patient, that specific intervention was not necessarily identified in Mr. Kempton's records.
Thank you.
So my follow-up question, Mindy, would be then, other than the massage therapist, there was not, he did not exceed the supervision ratio if we take that person out of the equation?
No, not necessarily. Sometimes mm-hmm. there was a PTA and two techs.
Right, yeah, so.
Yeah. There's two issues right there, right?
So yeah, and then there were times that, according to several interviews, he was off-site when aides were treating patients.
Right, and I remembered that as well. Mm-hmm. So I guess I'll just go back to Mr. Kempton and say, what can you say about being off-site and having your aides treat patients?
I was unclear, unaware of that. I thought the PTA and the aide could be there treating patients while I was off site. And I did not understand that correctly.
Was that frequent on Tuesday, Thursdays, mornings you were out? So it was the PTA and the techs treating patients without the supervision of a PT?
Excuse me, Kelly, it broke up.
Sorry, Tuesdays and Thursday mornings, it looked like you were out of the office, but therapists, PTA, and the techs were seeing patients. And that was a common practice then on Tuesdays and Thursday mornings?
It was, there was times that it, that there would be, I don't know if it was common. I would be in there. I would be in there in and out, but I would be out marketing and doing that.
Can you walk, sorry, Karen, I don't mean to hijack your question. I just have a question about this though. So can you just walk me through how you would delegate those patients to the PTA if you weren't even there to check on them, make sure that they were still okay to be seen by a PTA?
We would discuss the patient load, and we would discuss any concerns that we had with the patient, and then the PTA would see the patient.
When did that discussion happen?
There would be phone conversations, or the day before we would talk about it, or it'd be either in the clinic or over the phone we would talk about it.
Go ahead, Karen. I'm going to stop.
Would they ever text you if you if they had questions?
I don't recall. I would guess yes, but I'm not sure.
Okay.
Do you have students in your office?
No, not currently. No.
But do you take students?
I have in the past.
And what's your typical support staff ratio at this point?
At this point, it is just either one tech or two techs, depending on the load of the schedule. And that is it. And then I have my chaperone who's there. And then that massage therapist still comes in, but not very often. He's getting close to retirement.
So you don't currently have a PTA that you work with?
No, I do not.
Okay.
I have a PTA, but she's the chaperone. She's the approved chaperone. So.
Understood.
No, I do not have a PTA that I work with. No.
Just to clarify, if you don't mind, you have the PTA that's the chaperone. So when she's not chaperoning you with a female patient, is she treating?
No. No, she's just a chaperone.
So she's got no patient care responsibilities whatsoever?
No, she doesn't.
One of the allegations was that you were billing patients whose insurance was Medicare for services provided by your techs. Can you tell me about how, if there's any delineation between insurance providers and billing?
Typically, when a Medicare patient is on the schedule, I'm in that office with them, and the office in the gym is very big and open. And so I will keep my eye on the Medicare patient and be able to see what they're doing. And either I will go in and assist them, or I might tell one of my techs, like, hey, that's wrong. That's wrong on that patient. Can you talk to them?
But if they do their whole therapeutic exercise flow sheet with the techs, they're billed therapeutic exercise?
They are billed therapy when I'm out in the gym with them, yes. When I'm overseeing and watching them, yes.
So watching them?
Yes, I'm watching them.
Are there any other questions in this area of allegations regarding patient practice management, supervising personnel, and billing? Okay, then I think the last of the allegations has to do with ARS 32-2044-12 as it relates to ethical principle 4.1C. Physical therapist shall not provide physical therapy to a patient, client, while his or her ability to do so safely is impaired. This is cited purely based on the psychosexual evaluation. And I would just say, if there are any specific questions about the psychosexual evaluation, if Dr. Kempton's comfortable doing that in the public forum, that's fine. Or we can go into executive session for confidentiality if there's some specific questions about it.
He is not going to waive confidentiality.
Understood.
So, I do have some questions about the evaluation. I don't know if other members of the board do, but I think it would be helpful to me to flush out some of those questions in a executive session with Mr. Kempton present.
Okay. So then, do you want to make a motion to move into executive session to discuss with Dr. Kempton and this?
Yes, I suppose I should make it official. So I would move that we go into executive session with Mr. Kempton in order to question him regarding the psychosocial evaluation for the protection of confidential health information.
Second.
Judy, you want to call the vote? Oh, you're muted, friend.
Sorry about that. Hopefully there's no feedback. It's been moved and seconded to go into executive session to discuss confidential information. Dr. King?
Yes.
Dr. Bastillo?
Yes.
Dr. Hike?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
That motion passes.
Ms. Kent, do you have the link to the executive session? Okay, we'll share that with you. Give you some time to jump in there.
So do we log out of this and then log back in?
You simply hang up this.
You see the
tab open, and then you'll be able to open in a new tab the executive session.
Okay, one more time, Judy.
You'll click the hang up, the red button. But you'll leave the tab open so you can jump back into this one readily. Okay. You'll open the executive session in a separate tab. It'll take me just a minute to get those invitations to you. The recording is going to stop at 12:53.